So, yeah, so it's an opportunity if you have any questions or not just questions, things you want to share, insights, anything at all. This is just a free-form period that we can put ideas out there and see where they take us.
I've got one. It's been burning for the last 24 hours, really. An experience over Friday night in your talk, and then also sort of into yesterday morning with the devotion you did. And it's the handwriting. I looked at that handwriting pad on the overhead and on the handout, and listened to the analysis. And I thought, bugger, that's me. The messy stuff, because my handwriting, as most people will see, is not neat. and just the description of what that person is like. I thought, damn, that is me. And that left me with lots of questions about my own salvation and, you know, all sorts of things going on in my own head there. But then very, very strongly on yesterday morning, as we go through the devotion, the thing that came to me was vessels, the idea of vessels. And we're not that character, personality, whatever, but we're a vessel which can contain and manifest a particular something or other. So I sort of moved on then from thinking of, okay, that's me, to thinking, well, no, actually that's a quality that I can manifest. As I guess Swedenborg had the potential to manifest that, and he did manifest it in a very particular way there. But then it gives you a control or a choice over it. Both as a teacher and also a music teacher and a religious teacher, I have said in various places, the only thing I can't tolerate is intolerance. So that summation of what that person was like, it was me at one point in my life.
Yeah.
And it's me in terms of what I can still be capable of. So we were sitting around the table the other night and you said, oh, it's just a zealot, oh, mate. So I have to say that meditation brought me a lot of peace as a result of having had that experience. I just thought I'd put that out there because I don't know whether others had a similar experience or not. Hope someone did. that came through really strongly. Just the idea that we're a vessel for something and we can manifest it and it can influence us, but we can not manifest it also.
Just to set your mind at peace, David, I was thinking about the arrogance of Swedenborg in his earlier life. I go, like, that's me. So he can shake it, I can shake him.
I'll now give you the time.
You might have to wait until you're 60 odd years older.
David, is that automatic writing sample, is that authentic? There's no probability of it being...
No, it's authentic, as far as I know, yep. It's in Tosvik's, it's actually taken out of there. I just scanned it out of the biography. Okay. And Berquist also takes the same sample and includes it in that biography as well. Mm-hmm. So as far as I'm aware, it's authentic. I do have the analysis as well, because I didn't hand that
out.
No,
you just read it.
So, painful enough.
In the break, I'll get that photocopied, and you can take a copy of that as well. So we'll all be looking at our own handwriting and trying to work it out.
I was looking at yours. Yours always looks similar.
I think left-hand people also have a disadvantage in trying to do neat handwriting because
it's my mind is.
Writing all the time. You know.
And all the left-handers.
Yeah, so your husband.
I know he has got.
Yeah.
A lot of left-handed people. You do it like that, don't you? You kind of go over.
Yes, you smudge your writing.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's that. I think it's different.
Yeah.
So I don't go for the left-handed.
Excuse.
Well, my mother is left-handed, and her writing is the most beautiful writing I've ever seen, really. Although she went through a period where her left hand was covered with a stocking, and she had to write with her right hand at school and that sort of stuff. But.
Was amazing. The teacher used to come through with a big ruler and crack them. And he used to have this thing that you'd connect to the pencil and it'd connect to your finger. And, you know, it would obviously try to straighten the finger, you know. And, it was cruel. It was really cruel the way they were singled out. Like, you know, blue eyes, brown eyes sort of situation.
Yeah.
You know? Very nice.
Okay. So anything else? Anyone want to bring anything else?
Yeah, I do. You know, just after Friday, when I sort of had my little say, you know, you always look, you know, you always like, I'm critical of everybody else and myself, so that's a good thing, you know, because, like, I can see myself as well. And, you know, when I go to say something, you know, like, I'd like to say it eloquently and slowly and, you know, like, really draw it out and point out all the things and, you know, after I finished, everybody feels very angelic, but I don't know, I'm very harsh and, you know, I think I'm arrogant. Well, I know I'm arrogant, but, you know, that, and for what I wanted to say, how it sort of come through me wasn't good, so I can always see there's lots of improvement. But then that night I went home, and I'm reading The New Man by Nicole at the moment, and, yeah, it's a brilliant book. And there in this one paragraph, everything I said, he you know, he put it so beautifully. So
it wasn't his first draft.
Thank you. Yeah.
So you want to read?
But you have to just bear with me because I've never been a good reader out loud, but I'll do my best. Okay. From all this, we can realize that no one can continue to justify himself in the way he has always done, and except to become another and a new man. His feeling of his own righteousness must change, for as long as he feels that he is righteous as he is, he cannot change. His whole idea of what it means to be righteous must change, because it is exactly people's feeling of being righteous, of being in the right, that prevents him from changing. They are satisfied with themselves. It is only others who are wrong, not themselves. And it is also their feeling of being already righteous and in the right that determines their special form of justifying themselves. From this they derive their feelings of worth and merit, and it is just that they are most easily upset, most easily offended. Is anything more easy than being offended and giving offence? This is a human situation. The extraordinary harsh teaching of the Gospels
is to break this feeling of merit and complacency that everyone openly or secretly rests upon. And this is the source of being offended. In the light of the idea of the kingdom of heaven, in view of this possible inner evolution of this higher level, the man must come to realize that he is almost nothing as he is, and that all his vanity, merit, conceit, self-esteem, self-liking, self-satisfaction and self-love, and all his imagination of himself is practically an illusion. It is indeed only possible to understand that harsh teachings of Christ in view of its aim, which is to break up man's whole psychology, the man as life has made him, the man he regrets himself as, and make him think and feel and act in a new way, so that he begins to move towards a higher level, towards another state of himself that exists within him as a possibility. For to pass from one level to another, from the state of an acorn to the state of a tree, everything must be rearranged and altered. All a man's ordinary relations with different sides of himself must alter. This whole setting must change. The whole man must change. For this reason, Christ said. So,
wow. That's all about the zealot having to be zealot in us all. Not
yes.
Yeah, it's a great reading.
Yes.
Thanks.
Wouldn't worry about not coming with the right words, because Paul wasn't good with words.
Well, I'll tell you what, when you did speak, it really moved me, the other thing. Yeah, it wasn't, I didn't feel like it was I thought, oh, there's conviction. It didn't,
yes,
I didn't
that's
think,
right.
Oh, you're
yes.
ranting. Yeah. No, it was great. I really enjoyed it.
There was a spontaneity to it as well, and that's a lovely thing to hear as well.
Yeah.
So you're speaking from the heart, and that's always good.
Okay. So then I'll read this up. This is very nice. It's 1 Corinthians and 2, and says, this is Paul writing. So I was with you in weakness, in fear, and in much trembling. And my speech and my preaching were not with persuasive words or human wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power, that your faith should not be in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. Yeah? No.
Yeah.
So. Not having to be eloquent.
Yeah, true, because as you said, you know, somebody said last night that, was it Swedenborg? no, that was you, David, when you were explaining about when, oh, yeah, it was to do with the handwriting, you know, like he wasn't happy with what he'd done.
Julian brought up.
Destroyed it, is that what you mean?
Sorry?
That Julian was saying he felt he needed to destroy it.
Exactly, but that was when his best work come about, wasn't it, when he was challenging himself all the time. Oh, no, we're talking about the arcana and the word, how the arcana is just a smooth ride and, you know.
Yeah, that was in Julian's talk.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Comparing the word explain to what the feel of the arcana as opposed to the feel.
And that,
feeling,
yeah, Julian was just explaining that, you know, that he thought that the best of sleep all come out because it was really challenging him, where if you're really sort of mellow and everything, people might not hear those words or get what you're trying to.
So the struggle, there's always a struggle to anything of value or quality coming about, and so the struggle has to be an accepted part of the process.
I couldn't help last night, I was lying awake actually, found it hard to get to sleep after all these wonderful thoughts, lying awake thinking about the divine effort, you know, and so easy to trivialise that. I know we said, you know, it's impossible to say what the divine is, just simply to say that the divine is, but I was imagining the divine just working overtime, that first of all, to set an aim to lift all souls, you know, to
create us as individuals, and then to lift every individual as far as possible, where it's possible, with the freedom in place, up as far as we can possibly be taken over time. And just thinking that with the creation of that aim and the actual expression of that in the reality that we live in, the divine must have taken into account the difficulty that he faces by people resisting and out of that freedom just wandering off like sheep and not getting the point or taking a long time to get anywhere and not reaching their maximum potential and so on and so on and so on. You know, like, this has really been a very big focus on, you know, get your act together, set the aim very clearly to be aligned with that that divine wish and you know, relieve that suffering in a sense, you know, because I could imagine the divine suffering, but that's probably just a human projection onto that divine state.
Well, the thing when Jesus said, you know, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you know, how I wish I could gather you under my wings like a hen. You know, I mean, that's the feeling of, oh dear, here they go again.
Yeah.
Here we go again.
No, it's not so much a question, it's just my process and, you know, what I was going through last night as a result of putting some of these things together.
You sort of think of the prodigal son situation, that, you know, that represents God and the child, and, you know, that says that, you know, the son goes away, you know, spends all his inheritance, you know, works in a pig farm for a while and realises that he's being treated badly, returns home to dad, and dad's there, all loving, all accepting.
Yeah.
You know, go kill the best calf in the place we got, you know, my boy's home, and that's us coming back to God, and I suppose,
I suppose...
you can sort of get an idea that, you know, he sort of learned his lesson, he come home, and now everything's going to be right for the rest of his life, you know. And that's an expectation. But it's not, it's more of a struggle. It is a struggle to always stay on the right path, you know, to have your experiences which always takes you off the path, then you have to find yourself way back on the path again. And that's what life is, you know, that's the learning part of it. You know, if we just come back, you know, after spending our inheritance and said, I know now where my bread's buttered. You know, you really think, I really don't know if you've learned, if you've, you know, had all the experiences in life to make you wise and everything like that, because it's a lifelong process of, you know, always bringing yourself back. But you become more and more conscious of yourself. You learn about yourself, and then in knowing yourself, you know other people as well, because you can see yourself in them as well. So your relationship with mankind itself continues to grow and grow.
Yeah.
And then that brings you closer back home to God.
The prodigal son is a great story. And I often wonder whether the thief of Baghdad is intended to be the whole of mankind, because in a way it's our wandering off and getting lost and stubbing our nose against stupid outcomes from the decisions we're making in a limited way and being so external and natural that actually teaches us where the right path lies in the end. And, you know, there's still always that freedom to keep wandering off.
It's amazing, though, you know, because he did get to the stage where he thought, by getting his inheritance and going into another land and spending it all on everything you can imagine, on all the pleasures of life, and having those experiences, you know, that he learned that wasn't what life was about. You know, there is the illusion that everybody out there is fantastic. You know, people are wonderful, and once I get in with them, you know, this is going to be the heaven that I've always desired to find for myself.
Mm.
And man does that. That's man. And, you know, once he's out there and he's in the thick of it, he realises if you're not important, if you've got no money, nobody wants you, and the sort of job you're going to get is working in a pig farm. That's the best we've got for you.
Mm.
And then he looks back at the time when he was with his, you know, with his family, with his, you know, the love of his father, you know, guiding him, probably, and him rebelling against that. And that's probably, you know, the story of what happens to us. We want to go off and find heaven for ourselves.
Mm.
And it's our own illusion that we're looking to create or bring into the world. And some of us do it really successfully. We bring in a false image of heaven within ourselves and live in that until some disaster happens that sort of brings us back to a sense of our own reality. And we say, I can't do this anymore. I need a lot of help. You know, I need somebody to guide me now. Mm. I just haven't got the answers.
But that perpetual open door just made me, just overwhelmed me last night to realise that the sheer magnitude of the project and the extent of the love that is shown by both creating a name and yet knowing very well that in holding freedom as a very high principle in this design, you know, so that we don't feel that we're puppets of some process that's being pushed onto us by our parents or a god, is just enormous, you know. And then yet to still have people like ourselves to find the path and look for it and go, yeah, well, I want to know what that's about, you know. I want to participate in it.
But you know, that just
blew me away, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
that's
not a question.
No, that's great. I mean, what interests me about the story of the prodigal son is the brother.
Yeah.
So it represents two sides of ourselves.
Yeah.
And it's the experience of the prodigal son that draws out the nature of the brother, which is resentment, negative qualities, I suppose, that are present in that familiar group, that family group, and how we can despise that area of, like, so if you think of the brother as someone who, or the side of the personality that's into being secure, got it all worked out, all the expectations are set and they need to be met and all of that, and yeah, you know, and then the other side is that more risk-taking side, exploratory element, and depending on which side of that aspect, those aspects of our personality that we sit in, we can dismiss very vital experiential parts of our life as something that is not relevant to the process. So I just think that the brother is an interesting, you know, he had it all, but from his perspective, he had nothing. Once the simply because of how the father greeted the prodigal back into his own into his own heart and killed the fatted calf, and the brothers sort of going around saying, well, you never killed a fatted calf for me.
sounds like
my two boys at home.
Always doing the right thing, man. Never doing anything.
I kept thinking as you were talking earlier, though, your wonderful image of the wedding cake is that we all have to, from many different perceptions, you know, see the different things from different angles and repetitions all the time. What humanity is. It's just, you think you've got it? Well, you know.
And the devil is always dwelling up or welling up inside of us, you know, like, once you've come into a conscious understanding that you can see yourself, which is the most important, and you can see how you act, and then you say, I can change that now, because I don't like the way I am, so I can make myself better. You know, you can get a little bit, you know, really satisfied with the choices that you're making. Because a little bit later on, he comes back and he's doing exactly the same thing, and where you think, I thought I got past that, and this is back visiting me again. And then you come into that realisation that is a continuing thing through life.
Where I've become very conscious of the term Islam, meaning submission, because, you know, it's one thing for me to say, I want to make myself better. It's another thing to say, the choice I'm making is not for me to make myself better, but for me to permit the Lord to work through me to make me better. I'm not having a go at what you said, because I think it's beautiful, but I would realign myself and go, well, really, I've got to let go of this idea that I can do this because I have no power of myself. And the realisation, you know, from learning all this, that really it's God is so magnificent and so helpful and so wonderful in the way what he provides. We just got to align ourselves to what's to be learned and get on with it, you know, let the Lord work.
Yeah.
Michael, you reminded me of one thing that's all I never understood, but it touches on what you said about things coming back. I thought I got rid of that, but there it is again. that part in the Bible said you swept out your house, made it really clean, and the spirits came back. You're worse off than before. What does that mean?
That's a good one.
Is that because you did it through self-love?
What it is, there's nothing being put in to replace. And I don't know if it fits, but the one I like, and I did mention a bit earlier in the seminar, and I think it fits in a similar vein to that, is the idea of the wheat and the tares. You know, they grow together. And there can be a tendency for us, when you're doing work of self-reflection, when you become obsessed with the negativity that you see, you go about trying to rip it out. And in a similar way with that story, it's trying to clean things out, but not actually being aligned with the process in terms of having what's needed to replace. So seeing evils, wanting to rip them out, get rid of them, but then not having any good or truth in their place can mean that you leave yourself open to being reinvested. I think that's sort of what it's about.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's similar to me saying, you know, I went through, when I first came across the stuff a long time ago, I went, okay, well, no, I've got to do this and I've got to do this and I've got to do this. When that's all in place, you know, then I can live the spiritual life. No sooner did that happen and started getting bombarded with stuff. And it's a bit like, you know, somebody going on a diet and going, yeah, I'm going to cut out all my dairy and this and that and the other, and, you know, they go clean for a while and then suddenly they start breaking down and they go, well, you know, if I'm going to go halfway there, I'm not really going to go at all. And they're back to things with a vengeance, to the old ways with a vengeance.
Mm. And they end up putting on more weight than what it is when they started off. So that thing about, you know, you're worse off. There's more coming back in.
Because it was based on the wrong principle of not having something solid to bring into it, that gave it a core that was going to last.
It was like you said a while ago that you didn't trust that the Lord does this work for you, not
yeah,
you.
This,
the Lord does
it's me flogging me.
Yeah.
You're going, you naughty boy, you know, you need to get your act together. And then that other person who's holding the flail is a selfish as the one that's being flogged, you know. They're at the same level. There's no difference. So to have a period where you're just having an uncritical, a good look at self, you know, myself, but an uncritical sort of, you know, I don't want to get in there and actually do too much, because if I do, it's likely to come from the wrong self. And then to also try and watch which self is wanting to do what, you know, because that is part of the evil in me.
Yeah.
It's part of the evil is one self wanting to go, you need to look to be a good person, or you need to think that you're there, and the sooner you think you're there, you're going to be okay. But that's not the truth. The truth is it's ongoing for eternity to get rid of all this crap, you know. So that change of focus is very important for me.
But like you said, you know, you get to a stage where, you know, you're acting and you come to realise that, look, I'm the problem here. This is what's causing it, me. So, you know, then when you say to the Lord, look, I've tried, I've got nowhere, please help me.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes into your life and he makes it known and he shows you the change, or you become aware of the change that's taken place by not trusting in yourself to do it, but by trusting in the Lord to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then in time you see what the Lord has done inside of you, and that part of the new man, that's part of the new man. That's when you recognize the love that the Lord has for you has been shown to you, you know, that nobody could love you more than the Lord. And once you see that, you know, once, because it's going to happen a million times in your life, because, you know, the more you trust in the Lord to change you, you know, the more you recognize that's been fixed, that's been fixed, that's been fixed. And I've just sat here on the boat enjoying the ride. The Lord's done all the rowing for me, and I'm just sitting back and enjoying life.
You've got the whistle in your mouth.
that reminds me of in the Gospel of Thomas, there's one of the logos is a woman walking along with a pot of meal, you know, like flour, I suppose, on her head, and she's walking along, and it's got a hole in the pot, and she doesn't notice that the meal is actually, you know, pouring out behind her, and then she gets to a certain point and she realises suddenly it's empty, and that meal is like the negativities, and just by progressing and committing to that path, you know, eventually it does disappear. We don't really know how, we don't know what had to be reorganised, because we don't see all the ins and outs of what gets reorganised every time we hear a mistruth that hits us in the face, you know. But the truth is that it's being done in an orderly way, in hindsight you can sometimes see that, foresight can't see a thing, you know. It's like, just give me what's needed.
And I think that as a church, that's what we can bring to church, and we can share with other people outside the church, is your awareness and your knowing that the Lord does it all. So when somebody looks at you, you know, being an older, wiser person, you know, with an understanding of all of this, and comes to you and asks you, you know, how does it work, you know, because they're struggling, like everybody struggles with it, you know, that you're able to guide them then to the Lord. You know, because you're bringing them back home, and you know, it has so many different levels, you know, but it'll affect you again. You know, this sense that now I'm of worth, I can you know, help the Lord, you know, and help myself at the same time, you know, and that's the new man growing continually in us. But as it is, it's a lifelong process that, you know, we just
struggle.
That's a struggle
to do,
yeah.
It willingly.
But it's like carry the cross. That's all you have to do.
Yeah. I love that thing. I think you said yesterday about the constant changes, that every time you take in some new truth,
yeah.
The whole thing changing. That really hit me.
Yeah, it's remarkable, isn't it?
Transformers, isn't it?